We'll fix that. Okay, let's see. So for the agenda, what we'll do today is review Joe's email regarding the call for DID focal use cases, and then we're going to move into a DID issues working session. One thing I wanted to mention up front, I noticed there's a lot of GitHub activity this morning, so if anything happening there affects that discussion, please let me know. I haven't gotten a chance to review them yet. Let's move to introductions and reintroductions. Looking through the list to see someone who hasn't introduced themselves recently. Whoever is Zen Entropy? And then, we have the list of introductions too. Benjamin Young, do you want to reintroduce yourself? Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Mike, is Kim still talking? Okay, let me see. Let's try, Christian's not here. David Chadwick. David, can you do a reintroduction?
Yeah, sure. Can you hear me?
Yes.
So I'm David Chadwick. I work at the University of Kent, and I've been working on verified credentials for a couple of years. We built a pilot system for the UK NHS, which demonstrated how patients could access hospital systems on their mobile phones using verifiable credentials. Prior to that, since 1990, X509 and other things, and then on SAML and Hexacmel. So that's a bit of my history.
Hey, thank you, David. The connection was a little choppy. Let's see.
I think it's because it's OnSIP and people have complained about OnSIP.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I stopped using that as well. Okay, let's move to the next section, reminders. Consensus in New York is going on this week. So, all of the Bitcoin-fueled Lamborghinis are there. And if anyone has anything to wanna, I'm parking mine there for the week, too. Does anyone have anything they want to report out from consensus?
I'll mention something. So this is Joe. So Moses did organize drinks for folks in our community. That did happen last night. So I'm guessing none of those folks made it today, given that consensus is in full swing. Also, I'm looking forward to seeing what this new HTC DID phone is. Apparently, there's an announcement coming out today, but I don't have firsthand knowledge. But want to socialize that that's something that Moses seemed to be involved with, and HTC seems to be bringing to the market. It's kind of interesting. Not sure what it means, but.
Excellent. Thank you. For the second reminder is my data in Helsinki, end of August. I've made some progress with Marcus for moving that forward. Essentially, we got to the point where we're lining up the talk, and we'll send details out on that. I think he mentioned it's moving away from a panel type discussion, but it'll be three presenters. We'll talk about centralized identifiers, the ecosystem, and it should be pretty interesting. It's part of my
talk, I'm going to try to work in a quick survey of some of DID methods. So I might be, I will be sending parts of that out for review in case people have feeling very non-controversial, but yeah. Summer DID verifiable claims outreach. I think we decided on a week for that. I don't remember what it was. I'll try to make sure that we update that in our notes. Does anyone recall if we decided on when the outreach will happen?
It was the second of the two alternatives.
Agreed.
Oh, sorry, I didn't hear. What was that?
The second of the two alternatives, so I guess the week of the 16th.
Okay, excellent. We will note that. Okay, let's move to progress on current action items. Just 1 second while I set the topic. Okay, the list is coming. And if you have something to report, please let us know. It doesn't look right. Okay. Oh, this doesn't quite look right. I guess my data cannot Helsinki is both a work item and an action item. We need to clarify that. Anyone have anything they want to report? Please add yourself to the queue if so.
Yeah, so.
Pack go.
Okay. So there are actually two different Helsinki things, and I think one of them, Chris, unless you have a new update for me. So there was the panel, which was a work item that we're supporting Marcus on, and I think that's well engaged. There was also potentially another item, and then that's not the panel. But I don't think
okay.
that's happening.
Yeah, I don't really have an update on that other option either. It's they want me to maybe do a separate talk on just self-sovereign identity, as a semi-keynote type thing. But they were also talking about having the day after, the Saturday after, being kind of a self-sovereign identity salon, rebooting style. So, but I haven't got a confirmation on that.
Okay, right. I forgot about that part, the salon. Next, we have Manu on the queue.
Yep, two updates. There's the registries process thing, I think, is in the, it's both in the CryptoSuite registry and the DID method registry. So I think we have PRs for both of those things. Joe and I think, had a quick back and forth on some updated text for the PRs, but I think after both of those are done, we should be good. There are two things for TPAC preparation. One of them is what's happening at TPAC, and the other one is what's happening before TPAC. It's more related to rebooting Web of Trust than anything, but it looks like there's quite a bit of coordination work that's going to have to happen, and it's all going to be pretty rushed. Because of kind of delays between communication from W3C management to TPAC schedule to the VCWG and the CCG. So we may want to have kind of a powwow on how all of these events are going to fit together and what we're going to focus on each one. Otherwise, we're going to have a ton of overlapping issues and concerns.
Thank you. You got through both of your items? Just checking.
Yes.
Okay, excellent. Joe, you're next.
I just want to mention with regard to TPAC, they've done a preliminary scheduling, and looks like we're scheduled for Tuesday, and I'm going to ask for the 1:30 time frame. They sent me an email asking which time frame, and between 8:30 in the morning and 1:30 in the afternoon, I'm going to ask for the 1:30 one.
Okay, thanks, Joe. Next, we're going to move on to status of work items. Okay, let me send out the list of this. And also, we're going to just ask for report out of changes for from last week. Chris Rowland, which week and where is TPAC? It's in Lyon, and is it the 22nd through 26th of October? Does that sound right?
That's right.
Okay. Okay, so for work items, we got an update from Manu on registries. Let's see. Christopher Weber, do you have anything to report on object capabilities?
No, I've been pretty busy on some other things.
Okay. Similarly for education, occupational, we've nothing interesting to report. We're meeting again this week. So, Joe, you're on the queue.
I got the final draft into Shan. So once we get through that round of rebuilding Web of Trust business, we'll come over and bring that to see if it makes sense to iterate on it and hopefully publish it.
Sounds great. Manny, you're next on the queue.
Yeah, just a quick mention on OCAP stuff. So while Chris has been busy with other pretty pressing things, we are integrating a good chunk of the OCAP stuff into customer systems. So we're actually learning quite a bit on OCAP approaches. So the work's continuing. We can't say anything public about it yet, but it's definitely going into POC, pilot and production systems.
Great.
And it's looking really good. That's the other positive note.
That's wonderful. Let's see. So that's it for work items. I think let's move on to the call for DID focal use cases. And actually, one second, I want to send you a link to the email thread I'm referring to. Okay, so I don't think anyone responded to this. Joe, can I let you just give an overview of this and we'll have discussion?
Yes, so I did get a partial response from Moses and Dan Greening. They had a suggestion. They just didn't have all the dots filled in, so we're iterating to expand out that particular use case. But we welcome more use cases. The option is to post something simple to the mailing list. You don't need to fill in all the details, but the idea is that we're looking for a few good use cases, and here's a framework by which you can write up some ideas. You know, name, background, description, and let us know what's unique and distinct about it. And I will work with whoever submits suggestions to refine them and fill in the details so that by the end of the exercise, we will have 3 to 5 coherent and rich focal use cases that we can hang the rest of the feature conversations off of in the actual spec. So we look forward to people suggesting things. If you've got something that you're using DIDs for, we want to get it in the set of cases.
Sorry, Joe, I'm re-reviewing your thread. I wonder if we can do something with this for the education and occupational thing. You know, so I think that, I mean, I guess from to some extent, you know, it seems like it's not necessarily that interesting. Like we want to use it for recipients and issuers, you know, and one of the advantages is the idea of, you know, well, recipient ownership of their DIDs and being able to use them however they want. Do you have any, okay, so you have an example here, so we can look at this to see how to sort of frame the use case.
Yes, and unfortunately in that URL, the I lost some of the format that made it legible. So
I know, I noticed that too.
Might be easier to read in the original email if you just check your inbox.
Okay.
You could probably
so
search and find out.
Yeah, that's something we can do. We can start talking about that this week, actually, in the educational task force. I think I've been looking for sort of more concrete use cases that we can start working on, and I think this one's really nice and focused. So we'll take that on this week.
Where is that
cool.
one, sorry?
The it's called the Educational and Occupational Task Force. We have it every other Thursday. Same time this one is, and I'm going to be sending out agenda or notice shortly, just to the usual community credentials mailing list. Okay, let me see what is next. Okay, so next we're going to move on to DID issues working session. We've been having a lot of GitHub activity in the DID spec, which is wonderful. I think a couple were closed. We called out, I'm sorry, Heather, you're on the queue. There's several people on the queue, and I ignored them. Sorry, Heather, you go ahead. I'll scribe while you talk.
Hey, okay, that's cool. So I just had a question regarding the use case process. And so is it my understanding then the only way to submit use cases is by coming up with them on your own and then like submitting them?
Well, you're certainly welcome to collaborate with other folks. I guess I'm hearing a request in there to spend some time in a more open-ended conversation.
Yeah, I just kind of felt, I feel like it's a little bit like throwing it over the fence and I mean, if you're creating the technology, that makes sense, but I'm kind of coming at it from a different perspective. And so I personally would rather collaborate with people. And I know that I've been in discussion and email with, I'm blanking his name, Jeff. And I know that those are not, I mean, I know that there's, we've talked about putting stuff in stories, but I just want to make sure that I feel like if it's just being developed one way, we throw them over the fence, that it is going to be a limited set of use cases. And also it's just really not the way I work.
So speaking as the one who's taken the lead on writing up those use cases, I'm happy to work with however you want to work. What can we do to get you to write something up?
Well, I had actually in the previous meeting volunteered to co-lead this. And kind of the way that I would do this is, I don't want to set up more schedules or times or meetings in our already busy schedules, but I was imagining that at least there would be a few calls to put a structure in place, and then maybe, I don't know that we want to necessarily go over everything, but just kind of like start circling around what's happening in the space and kind of decide which of those use cases we wanted to prioritize, to develop into bigger, to include in this. If there are other, half-baked use cases that we might want to, put aside as, hey, we've thought about this, but we don't necessarily want to include it in the use case document for this for all the wonderful reasons that Manu has described. That's kind of more of the way I would approach this.
So that's what we're doing here now, I think, actually. So step one is for people to suggest use cases.
I guess I'm seeing it more like a little chicken and egg here, because how can we have use cases before having some conversations?
Are we conversing right now? That's where I'm losing the thread. This is the opportunity to have a conversation.
I guess I'm going under the assumption that this is like a topic we can just like discuss during these calls, because I thought these were more like status update calls.
Well, they are, but we also have topics. I mean, if you want, I can jump the queue to sort of say a little.
Yes.
Okay. So there's sort of, I kind of consider there are three issues here. First one is we have two targets. One target is sort of for external, for the DID submission, which has to include some use cases, which will probably be fairly narrow, fairly small, non-controversial, et cetera. Then there is what we want to do for ourselves internally, which can be substantially more deep and, you know, cover, have more use cases and things of that nature. So we have two different targets ultimately. I think what Joe has been suggesting is that we first kind of collect a, you know, what we already know or are already familiar with, that the, at least we have sort of an initial list, because we haven't had an initial list. I do agree that, scheduling some time to do the other half of the story and the types of things that I think is very legitimate that, Heather would like to see in the user stories is worthwhile, and whether or not that's an off meeting from this, or whether or not we, dedicate, 20 minutes, 40 minutes, whatever is appropriate on a Tuesday for this topic, when we have something that is worthy of that dialogue. And I think it'd be great, Heather, if we get to the point where it is a group discussion and we do schedule it for one of these Tuesdays, because we only really use the first 20 minutes for status updates. The rest of it is for, deeper conversation. But, that you can lead that that discussion. But we do have to remember, back to the beginning, there is two targets. there's the small one and the deeper one. So that's it.
Thanks, Christopher. And I'll Heather, does that sound good to you?
Yeah, I guess I was just kind of like, I didn't understand the process, and that's why I wanted to ask here is like, it wasn't clear to me that this collecting of use cases was the first step via, from Joe's email. It looked like it was all going to be, like, it appeared to be something else to me, and so I guess just having a clear understanding of that process. And also, I'm here as a resource, I don't know, like, here's a resource to help make that part of the collaborative aspects. Like, I'm happy to shepherd those aspects. I know there were also a few other people on the call last week that were also interested. And so at least the way I think about it from a collaborative perspective, people like say there's interest, there's kind of discussion about that. And I didn't see any of that, so I was just curious.
Yeah, quick note as chair, I agree with what you're saying. I've been wanting some clarity or maybe just some intro to what it's like to write these use cases for, in this context. So I like the idea of devoting time to it. And so John Jordan, I noticed you took yourself off the queue, but I want to call on you anyway because you've been waiting for a long time. I'm sorry about that.
No problem. I mean, I was just going to mention for us, we are working on a use case where we're interested in understanding how it would be possible for a person who has a DID relationship with a service to hand over control of that DID to their business identity. So we're interested in understanding what the implications are of passing over control of a DID and its documents. it's quite fascinating. So just a little preview of what we're going to be.
Thank you. Let me double check the queue. I noticed a few people have removed. Christopher, you're on the queue.
No, I jumped it earlier. I'm off.
Okay. Manu, you're next.
No, that's fine. Samantha, is that you?
Yeah, it's me.
Okay.
Hi.
Do we want to switch and do intros real quick, or do you want me to keep going?
Sure, yeah, let's do intros.
Okay. So, Samantha, if you'd like to intro yourself, please go ahead.
Oh, sure. Sorry, I apologize. I'm not sure where to find the queue. I just called in. My first time on the call. I really appreciate being invited in. And I'm excited to learn more about how, just learn your work style and everything like that. I work in a lot of different kinds of industries, but I'm really passionate about self-sovereign identity and data sovereignty, obviously. So I just wanted to say, because I will have to run out a little bit early, that I would love to help with the stories and use cases side, because I have a bunch of them. And so I just wanted to put that out there, and people can reach out to me on the thread. And that's all I wanted to say for now. I'll have more announcements with my project soon. But thank you guys for having me.
Awesome. Welcome to the group, Samantha. Kind of going down the queue again. Okay, so the topic is use cases, what I'm hearing is a bit of a confusion over the process. How do we get all these ideas that everyone has into a document and then do two things with it? One, rapidly push it into the W3C process. We have a very hard deadline on doing that, and we have to do that in the next month and a half to 2 months. And then the other one is, how do we make sure that we are covering the entire space holistically, making sure that we have use cases that pull in all these different requirements. So I think, Joe, one of the things that might be missing is we have a number of new people that have not participated in creation of use cases before. So what we might need to do is to just give people an understanding of the process really quickly. I'm not saying during this call, but I think clearly people are a bit confused about the process and how this happens. To reiterate, we are at the very beginning. We're in the brainstorming phase. We're in the ideation phase. This is the phase before we start talking about stuff. So Heather, I agree where, at some point the group's going to end up talking about this stuff, but we have to get some things together so that we can have something to talk about. So I think, what Joe's trying to do is front run that and say, okay, everyone submit your ideas so that we have a collection that we can kind of talk over and then whittle down into things that we're moving forward to W3C. So all that said, I think, there's an understanding that we will end up talking about, all of these in time, but we should not lose sight of the fact that if we do not hit this hard deadline, we're not going to be ready for TPAC in October, and as a result, all of the work will suffer. So we have to be very sure that we don't wrap ourselves around the axle trying to pick the perfect use cases, and instead pick use cases that are good enough for us to at least ask for an official working group at the World Wide Web Consortium.
Thanks, Manu. I think we're done. I don't see anyone else on the queues. I think we're good with that topic, and we can move on to DID issues.
We have someone who wants on the queue.
I'm sorry, what's that?
Oh, how do I
DDC.
Yeah, this is Dave Challoner. I work at the Applied Physics Lab, and I've looked at the use cases that are up there, and one thing that's not clear to me is why we need a new standard for verifiable credentials that's better than just a digital signature over some data. And I think the use cases that are selected need to show why the already existing digital signature standards don't work. And basically, I really want to see that. I haven't really understood why a new standard is necessary by reading those use cases.
Manu's on the queue to respond.
Yeah, sorry, David. So you're kind of jumping into the middle of something that's been going on for a while. So the use cases we're talking about today are around decentralized identifiers and decentralized identifier use cases. The verifiable credentials use cases, it's a totally different group. It's an official W3C working group, and we're definitely not talking about those use cases here. So different use cases, different groups. They do kind of intersect, but we're trying to be very focused and just talk about decentralized identifier use cases today.
Let's see. Okay. So the general idea is to discuss any open PRs and issues, but we did call out a specific set of topics we wanted to review. Manu, because I've not looked through the latest status as of this morning, is there any particular order you wanted to go over them in?
That order is fine. That's in the agenda.
Okay. So first we want to talk about is DID service naming and identification. And hold on a second. I forgot some bookkeeping stuff. I'm going to set the topic. I don't know. Do we have a command for subtopic? I'll just go ahead and write it anyway. Let's see. Okay. So, and the issue is here. Okay. So, yes, this one was to remove name from service description. And we had an associated poll request. Let me point to that too. Okay, so we have some reviews that aren't finished yet. Manu, do you want to talk to the current status?
Yep. Okay, so this has to do with service descriptions in the DID document. The DID hardening spec proposal that we had back in December and January suggested that we should use names, we should name services. And that the name should be used in constructing a URL. The problem with that, we have since discovered a way that we think is cleaner by using the ID field in the service description. So instead of having, name and then figuring out some way of like kind of putting it together with the decentralized identifier and looking in the service description field, the algorithm is more heavyweight than it needs to be. So this pull request suggests that we can simplify the algorithm while keeping all of the previous abilities of service descriptions. So the suggestion is don't use name, just use the ID field. We can't make really too much progress on this today because I don't think we have Marcus or Drummond on the call today. I think they're both at consensus. This is just a heads up to the group that we're suggesting simplifying the service naming syntax and for people to object or weigh in if they have a problem with the technical approach that we're suggesting.
Yeah, and regarding this, some of this for the people who aren't here, I can follow up afterwards and ping the mailing list for any people who need to respond specifically. So it looks like we just need Marcus and Drummond. Next, we have, right, a question over DID document version.
I'm in the queue. I'm in the queue.
I'm sorry. I am not screen managing well.
That's okay.
Okay, Chris, go ahead.
So, sort of a question for Manu within what you know of the context. I mean, are these things defined in method specs to a certain extent, other than how they're described? I mean, I know for BTCR, we're basically saying, hey, there is a thing which we're calling a BTCR endpoint, and here is how you can address it using, the DID URL scheme if you want to, and we're kind of, we can do it with question marks and hashtags and all that type of stuff to address specific entries or whatever in a BTCR endpoint. Which is different than, say, how some other service does things. I'm a little confused on where. I recognize the naming issue, but I'm a little confused on. Okay, so you've given it a name. Where is that? How you talk to that name defined?
In a service
description. You could talk to it.
So the short answer to your question is it's in a service description spec. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Okay. And do we have an example of a service description thing at this point? Or?
We do not.
Okay. Anyhow, I obviously would like to see one for BTCR, which is, I think, an interesting different case because it's a reference into a static document as a service. So maybe that's too limited, but at least it's not big scale. That's it.
I put my next topics in. You have to look back a few entries in IRC. So the next thing we wanted to discuss is DID document versioning. Let's see. So the question is, should a DID document have a version number? And the current proposal is to make it part of the DID method, but not the DID spec. And let me paste it again. This is where the discussion is taking place. I wonder if Bowden is on the line and if he could talk to it. Bowden, are you here?
Hi, do you hear me?
Yes.
So I'm here, but actually I've posted this question quite a lot of time ago, so I do not have comments about it. It's just that I wanted to add ability to have an update number in valid book specifications for valid book method, DID method. So maybe Manu can comment more because he was the last one who commented on that issue. I'm sorry if this is a little bit confusing.
Yeah, that makes sense. So Manu, do you want to go next?
Sure. Yeah. Bowden, that made sense. So the problem that Bowden is referring to is that you need to be able to refer to a very specific version of a DID document throughout time. So, for example, if you need to check a signature that happened 6 years ago, to see if that signature, when it was made 6 years ago, was valid, then you're going to need to refer to that version of the DID document that many years ago, right? So this is it's probably going to be an increasingly need for things like verifiable credentials that are signed using keys that are kept on decentralized ledgers, right? So I think the problem is absolutely there. The question is, how do you address this? One way that we could do it is we could put a version on the DID document itself, meaning like in the DID document itself, and that has a couple of downsides. The other mechanism is we could put a version number, we could associate it with metadata. So when the resolver hands back a DID document, it could have metadata associated with it that talks about a version number or date or something like that. And then the third approach would be to allow DID methods to specify how a version number could happen. So for example, in things like decentralized hash tables, may not have a version number ever, right? The data is just gone, and the only thing that matters is the latest version. So there's this suggestion that we basically say, yes, this is a real problem, and we need a solution for it, but it's up to the DID methods to specify how they do versioning, if they do versioning at all. And I think that's the suggested proposal for closing this issue. So the question is, Bowden, do you think that would work for you, or do you feel like it really needs to go into the DID document?
I think it does not need to go into the DID document. Actually, for a valid book, the DID document, as of now, as we did it, like the current development version, we have one current DID document and verifiable and use verifiable credentials to update it. I think, well, definitely it does not need to be in a DID spec in the general DAD spec.
Okay, and that's helpful. Like that allows us to kind of close this issue off and then move it, as Kim is suggesting, to somewhere else where we specify that is the job of the DID method.
Dimitri Z is on the queue.
Thank you. So my question is there any interest in standardizing or at least discussing the results of fetching a DID document? And here's what I mean. So I'm, as context, I'm working on a JavaScript DID resolution library with Manu and Digital Bazaar, and I was talking with Marcus, who also has the Universal DID Resolver, and we were talking about the metadata either of the DID document or of the fetch result itself. So how long the fetch results took, which of the ledgers or nodes did it hit, that sort of thing. And I think in both of our projects, we sort of officially gravitated towards returning a top-level document, embedding the DID in it, and returning the metadata. And each of our libraries does it in a slightly different way, but we're essentially doing the same thing. So I was wondering if the group would like to discuss or consider the possibility of standardizing that metadata.
We have someone in the queue. I have an answer for
well,
that.
Well, but that was my point as well.
Okay, cool. Go ahead.
To directly follow on to that, I mean, we came up with that same kind of need in BTCR because there are a number of things that really aren't the DID document per se, but, you know, could be useful to the party that is asking for a DID resolution so that it can make certain kinds of security decisions and choices. I'm not sure having a standard for it precisely, but I think it'd be great if we had at least some, you know, some base level number of metrics that, you know, are, you know, in that, you know, I could very much see that, you know, the metadata should have the information about the date of the, you know, of the last update of the DID, which in some cases will not actually exist in the DID itself, in the DID document itself, and, you know, things of that nature. So, and I think that in some cases, you know, parties may want to store that information, the metadata information, you know, if they have a security need for that in some fashion. So I'm not sure how that fits into our spec writing, but, you know, certainly BTCR, you know, the Veris One and the DID Resolver, all three kind of independently have come up with a variety of things which are not technically the DID document. And probably shouldn't be. That's it.
Thanks, Christopher. Ryan, you're next.
So on the previous topic about versioning, is there anyone saying that the DID spec should not require DID methods to address the issue of versioning in their own specifications? We do have the option of requiring, you know, some discussion of it, even if the DID methods decide that for some special reason it does not apply to them and they're going to opt out of versioning.
Okay. Actually, I'm going to skip over myself. I'm curious to hear. Christopher covered everything I want to say. And let's go to Manu next.
Right. So I'm trying to address Christopher and Dimitri and Ryan's comments and Bowden's comments all in one shot. So I think the answer to all of those is we need a resolver spec. Currently in the DID spec, we have a section about DID resolution, and it's really weird in the spec. I suggest that we take that section out of the DID spec, create a new spec, a new CCG work item that is the DID resolver specification, and then that's where we can talk about all this metadata, right? So resolvers will fundamentally need to return some kind of metadata. And Dimitri, I think that addresses your concern around, do we want to collaborate on you know, the data model and protocol. Christopher, I think that gives a clear home for this. Bowden, I think this, you know, addresses your concern by, you know, not forgetting about this issue, but rather saying this is the job of DID resolvers to do. And Ryan, I think that addresses your issue where, you know, we basically say in the DID resolver spec, the expectation is that you deal with versioning unless you can't, like you're a DHT or something like that. So I think that addresses all of the concerns that were raised. Let me stop and see if there were any objections to that.
Yeah, one thing, well, I don't see anyone in the queue. It sounds like a no-brainer to me. I don't know if we need to do a vote, but otherwise I could just create an action item for the, you know, for us to follow up on that and create a separate specification. Manu's on the queue.
The only concern I have is I know that DIF is working on the resolver, and I don't know if they're also working on a specification, so we should be careful not to step on that. But given that DIF is about implementations and not specifications, we might want to reach out to Marcus and the DIF folks and ask them if it's okay if we start working on a DID resolver spec.
Okay. I'm going to resolve this by saying create DID resolver spec, but coordinate with the DIF. Okay, so it sounds like, another action is to resolve this current issue we're talking about from the DID spec, so we can iterate on it there. Last item that we had, and we're short on time, so we may not get to cover it, but the very last topic was extensibility. All right, 1 second. Okay, so the question here is, should applications bail if they don't understand an extension to the DID document? Manu, can you talk to this one too?
Sure. So we've had an action item to add an extensibility section to the DID spec for a bit. So the fundamental problem was that when people were reading the DID spec, they didn't necessarily understand the extensibility model for the DID spec. So we've added a section to explain how extensibility works in the DID spec and how you extend things like service descriptions and other properties in the DID document. This extensibility section is largely borrowed from the Verifiable Credentials Working Group's extensibility section in the Verifiable Credentials document. And so what we're finding is that in the Verifiable Credentials Working Group, there has been a fairly strong push such that if you don't understand a part of the DID document, that you should throw an error immediately. Meaning like there's, you know, the default should be to just throw an error if you don't understand everything in the DID document. In a verifiable credential, if you don't understand the entire verifiable credential and every single property in it, you should throw an error. I believe I have copied and pasted that same language into the DID spec, but I'm questioning whether that's the right thing to do. So for example, you can have a service array where you really only understand two of the services in that array. And there may be 100 services in the array, but you only understand two of them. Should you throw an error in that case? I think the argument right now is you shouldn't, because the only thing that you care about is the services that you care about, the two services that you care about. So the general question is, do we want to do the same thing as we did in the Verifiable Credentials Working Group and throw if you don't understand everything in the DID document, or is the default just to be just to allow anything and you only focus on the parts of the DID document that you care about?
Ryan's on the queue.
I think I'm going to defer my question.
Okay. We can come back to you. Christopher, you're next.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is an interesting issue. So I think I understand why Verifiable Claims is making that assumption. I mean, my worry about the Verifiable Claims version of this is that's fine when you have a very small claim, but if you have a rich, complex claim that is like your entire educational history, including your grades in a comp sci class, that may be more challenging. But we'll not talk about Verifiable Claims, talk about DIDs. I mean, I think there's two different issues here. I think we have a couple of different clients who is it that is interpreting the DID document? I mean, one party is kind of what I would call the naive app, who basically says, I don't need everything. All I need is how do I find the particular key that I need to be able to communicate with somebody else. And somebody else goes, well, I don't care about the keys. I want to know what the service endpoint is or whatever. And I think the assumption on the DID side of things is that there's a wide variety of needs, a wide variety of parties that are going to be requesting information out of the DID document or only need a small portion of it. Thus, I don't think we can go to the extreme that we do with a verifiable claim. I also think there are cases where, especially with extensible DID documents and such, where, in fact, I have an idea around IPFS-based DID documents where
the tail of the DID document is actually constructed from a series of ICFS things that could actually be pointed to the head by a the head would be different, but could be multiple DIDs. So like you'd point to the head of a DID from a variant, you point to a different head from DTCR, you point to a different head from Sovereign, but then some of the, well, Sovereign's probably that example of this, but, you know, but then in ITFS, the extensions to the DID documents could all be shared. They could, you know, there's no reason why I can't have my, list of signing keys be consistent, BC signing keys list be consistent across multiple DIDs that I use. Secondary issue is what should a resolver decide? And I think that, you know, this goes back to that resolver spec. If a resolver, you know, may want to have a, you know, some kind of warning or a thing there, because they're a different kind of customer of our DID services, and they may want to have a different level of requirement. That's it for me.
And we're at time, but I want to end with Dave Longley.
Okay, I'll try to be quick. I agree with what Christopher said, and I wanted to reiterate what I was saying in RC for people on the call, which is effectively all of this depends on whether or not the semantics of what you do understand in the DID document can change based on what you don't understand. And I think a goal that we should have for extensibility is that we go for this sort of monotonicity of logic, which means if you're extending something in the DID document, you are not changing the meaning of other things that it already exist in the DID document that other people understand. And if we go forward with that, I think we'll be good.
Thank you. Thanks, everyone, and have a great week.